Hello, you are very, very welcome to the Waterways Ireland podcast, a new series with me, Turtle Bunbury, in which I'll be exploring the story of the rivers, lakes and man-made canals that crisscross the island of Ireland. Over the coming episodes, I'll be homing in on the fascinating histories, mysteries and other curious tales of these wonderful waterways that have been such vital arteries of human existence in Ireland since long before the dawn of recorded time. In this introductory episode, I've called it The Flow of Time. I want to give you an overview of what this series is about, as well as a little insight into the early history of canals and waterways in general. The main waterways that we'll be talking about are the River Barrow, the Lower Ban, the Shannon Erne Waterway, which includes Loch Erne, as well as the Grand Canal, the Royal Canal, and also the Ulster Canal. There are multiple others and various offshoots and lakes and so on, which I'll also be looking at as the series evolves. In fact, by the time you add in all the different canals and navigations along Irish rivers and lakes, I think there are almost 40 waterways in motion across Ireland at one point. But we'll go gently for you, and I'll try not to make this too complicated. Bottom line, it's a pretty massive body of water, the Shannon River Basin, for example, as in the area covered by the Shannon River and its estuary and all of its tributaries and lakes. That equates to about a fifth of Ireland's total area. It's a little less than 3 million acres. Waterways Ireland has three of its four regional offices on or very near to the Shannon, at Carrick-on-Shannon in Leitrim, at Athlone in Westmeath, and another down at Scariff Harbour in County Clare. It has another regional office in Dublin, while its overall headquarters is in Enniskillen on the River Erne. And there's a huge amount of work going on in their world in terms of blue ways and green ways and restoration work, sustainable tourism. There's art projects and virtual reality projects and so on. And we'll touch on plenty of that over the course of this series. But we're going to kick off with the history. And from a historical perspective, the waterways are about as perfect a topic as you'll find on the island of Ireland. Humans have been using our rivers and lakes as transport routes since time began, as well as places to develop the first communities and towns and bridges and such like. So in coming episodes, I'll be going way back in time and looking at the birth of our major rivers, the Barrow, the Erne, the Shannon, the Boyne, the Liffey, and how they took on their present shape during the last ice age. We'll seek out the headwaters of those rivers, the source, and look at how and why each one got its name. Spoiler alert, almost every river in Ireland is named for a goddess, or sometimes god, of the mythical Tuatha De Danann, as indeed are our lakes. We'll consider the extraordinary archaeological legacy that lies along each of those rivers. In some instances, that brings us right back to the Mesolithic and Neolithic age, before the Bronze Age. It's a time when people were so bored without Netflix and iPhones and TikTok that they just covered the land in gigantic rock sculptures and highly complex underground graves that only light up on the winter solstice. It's incredible, mind-bending stuff, and we'll touch on some of that. Our natural waterways have always been one of Ireland's most terrific assets. They're wonderful, slow-flowing rivers, large lakes, and these were our highways for thousands of years, especially when so much of our island was covered in forest, with precious few roads in between. And if you take the Shannon, for instance, that's a river that allowed people to effectively come in from anywhere on the entire Atlantic Ocean and make their way upstream, reaching as far as Dowra in County Cavan when the navigation was at its peak. And maybe you had to walk a chunk of the way, but at least you had a river to guide you. Or if you came into New Ross in County Wexford in the south, up the Barrow, the second longest river in Ireland. Now, where the river enters the sea, it is tidal and too dangerous for navigation. But if you started at St. Mullins, you could get by boat all the way up the Barrow to Athy. And of course, as I say, these waterways were the principal highways and byways on the island for thousands of years for chieftains and pilgrims and warriors and young lovers on the run. So we'll try and work out what sort of boats people were using back in the distant past, right through to the ideal vessels to cruise the waterways in the present day. We'll also look at the way in which Christianity left its mark during the medieval period, initially with the monastic schools that started at places like Clonmacnoise on the River Shannon or Old Loughlin just off the River Barrow, or indeed the school at Bangor way up on Belfast Lough. I also want to look at some of the more intriguing hermits, who can resist a hermit, as well as the smaller monasteries that sprang up on islands up and down the country, especially on Loch Ree and Loch Earn. Where there are monks, there be Vikings. So we'll look at the impact of those terrifying raiders and how they penetrated so deeply into the Irish countryside by rowing their longships up those very same waterways. We'll look at the way in which, after the Vikings, the rivers became the boundaries of a new world as Ireland evolved into the Anglo-Norman lordship with its castles and walled towns and toll bridges and mighty abbeys and thriving markets. There is, as I say, no shortage of history along these waters. It's an amazing network of water channels, although I don't want to overplay how interconnected everything was. I mean, all those rivers were a lot more marshy and sprawly and unnavigable in times past, as I'll explain in due course. But the concept of travelling by water and carrying products by water was something that would evolve into a truly remarkable project that became a cornerstone of Irish life and which really kicked off in the 18th century. And by that, I mean the canals. Canals are very logical structures. You have a water channel on your left and you have another one on your right. You want the water from one channel to go into the other. How do you do that? You cut a track through the land that connects the two. A channel. A canal. Et voila. You probably did something like that with a stream or a pond when you were a kid. Now, the canals we're talking about in this series are obviously rather more complicated than that, but the principle is much the same. The Grand Canal, for instance, involved cutting an artificial channel that runs for 132 kilometres, 82 miles if you prefer. That required a huge amount of engineering, there's 43 locks and whatnot. I'll be looking at the Grand Canal in more depth later in this series, and also touching on things like the industry that sprang up because of the new canal, not to mention the Guinness barges and how the kegs of stout were not quite as full when they reached their destination as they had been when they left the Guinness Brewery. A potted history of canals, they have been around for a very long time. They had them in Mesopotamia, that's modern-day Iraq, at least 6,000 years ago. Again in ancient India and ancient Egypt and ancient Afghanistan, you'll find early examples of canals. The Chinese were first off the mark with inventing rising gates and slipways and other clever ways to transport vast shipments of rice and grain around the country. China has a Grand Canal too, sometimes called the Jinghan Grand Canal, and it runs for over 1,000 miles. It's the longest in the world, always has been, starts in Beijing, connects the Yellow River and the Yangtze River. It's an incredible feat of engineering that's developed over the last 1,000 years or so, but China's Grand Canal actually kicked off in the 7th century, about the same time as the early Christians were starting to build island monasteries here in Ireland. By the time those Viking raiders had started burning down those same Irish monasteries 1100 or 1200 years ago, the Chinese had invented the pound lock, the first device where boats were lowered and raised through a built-in chamber, and it's the ancestor of our present-day canal locks. In a later episode, I'll be looking at the ingenious Cistercian monks who built a whole heap of abbeys along multiple Irish waterways, Mellifont, Boyle, Jerpoint. The Cistercians excelled at building weirs, and by the late 12th century, the time of the first Normans in Ireland, that's when you get the first artificial channels being created here. Or carved, perhaps, is a better word. I think the oldest canal is in Galway, the Friar's Cut, which enabled boats to pass through an island at the southern end of Loch Corrib into Galway Bay. That's still used today. As I say, I think that's the oldest, but if you know of an older one, do please get in touch. It was during the time of the Normans that the first proper weirs were built on Irish rivers, a weir being a dam, a barrier across the river, made of big stones back in those days, that created a pool of water. And it's useful for people who wanted to keep fish stock, but it's also vital for raising water levels in shallow areas so that our boats could navigate the surface. And weirs also meant you could divert water from the rivers into mill races, these special channels that turned water wheels, which in turn created power, water power, to crush oats so that they could make loaves of bread and have, say, a couple of slices of Marmite on toast when they were feeling peckish. Now, I'm not going to go into much depth about Vikings or monks or the medieval stuff at this point. There's plenty to say, of course, but let's zip through to the late 17th, early 18th century, 300 or so years ago, just after King Billy won the Battle of the Boyne. You've heard of King Billy, William of Orange, the Dutch prince, who is one of the leading Protestants in Europe, who one way or another became king of England and Ireland in the 1690s. And that Dutch link is important. The Dutch are world-renowned at building canals and waterways and reclaiming water. A powerful German politician by name of Bismarck, you might have heard of him, he once allegedly remarked that if the Dutch were given Ireland, they would make it the most beautiful island in the world. But if the Irish had the Netherlands, they would fail to maintain all the dikes and dams and be drowned. A little unfair, but his remark does underline how the Dutch were so widely admired for their skills with taming rivers and lakes and even the sea. And because of that Dutch influence that came into this part of the world during the reign of King William, there was a growing interest in Irish waterways generally in the early 1700s. And this prompted the Irish Parliament in Dublin to pass an act in 1715. An act, deep breath, to encourage the draining and improving of the bogs and unprofitable lowgrounds, and for easing and dispatching the inland carriage and conveyance of goods from one part to another within this kingdom. That's a complicated line. Let's break that down a little. Draining and improving the bogs to make the land more profitable. Well, that's a pretty straightforward concept. And there was an enormous amount of draining and improving over the decades that followed, even if it wasn't always very successfully done. The second part of that act referred to easing and dispatching the inland carriage and conveyance of goods. In other words, let's sort out the transport system and get people and products from A to B by making our rivers easier to navigate. And so, by extension, can you build us a few canals? On the back of that act, 18 different navigation schemes were launched across Ireland in the early 18th century, and they were almost all complete disasters. Why? Well, lack of funding for the most part, and only two schemes made any real progress. One was a minor tweak to the River Maig near Daire Manor in County Limerick. The other was a scheme to make the Liffey more navigable, which did work for a while, but even that kind of came a cropper in the long run. It was all about the money, because clearly the only way any of these canal projects would succeed would be if a huge amount of money was pumped into A, get them off the ground, and B, keep them in motion. Where are you going to find that money? Tolls? Yep, you bring in some money via tolls. But perhaps a canal would generate income by the goods being transported, like, say, bringing coal from the coal mines of Tyrone or Roscommon deep into the households of Dublin and Belfast. And coal was starting to earn big bucks for canal investors in England, so there was plenty of interest in Ireland. In 1759, a mapmaker called Henry Brooke, he described Irish waterways as a giant spider's web that would enable Ireland to spin her own web of happiness out of her own bowels. He reckoned that if 80,000 idle hands, inverted commas, were put to work, you could connect Dublin to the Shannon in the space of a year. That's pretty ambitious, but that's kind of how they did it in China. And you can sort of see where he was coming from. As we will see, it took a whole lot longer than a year. And for slightly crazy reasons, they ended up building two canals from Dublin to the Shannon instead of one, for which the building and maintenance costs were massive and constant. And as we'll see, almost every canal was doomed to be a disappointment, leaky, money-munching, exhausting, and then just as they worked out how to get it right and build a sensible canal in the 1840s, along came the railway that utterly knocked them for six and meant that the canals were almost entirely redundant by the 1940s and 1950s. Almost entirely. And then came a glimmer of hope, largely ignited by those forward-thinking souls who recognised the long-term importance of having waterways, rivers and canals that flowed freely through the land. And that's, well, it's become increasingly important as tourists, whether they're domestic or international, enjoy the waters, walking and cycling on the greenways and the blueways of our beautiful riverbanks and canal banks, or maybe voyaging on barges and cruisers and other boats and so on. But to my mind, the story of the Irish waterways is actually only just beginning. The canals didn't work in the age of the Industrial Revolution, but maybe their golden age is yet to come. As we voyage towards the middle decades of the 21st century, maybe these tracts of perpetual rainwater that tumble down from our mountains and hills into our rivers and our lakes and our streams and our canals, that network of waterways, well, it's serving another incredibly important purpose. It's clearly a vital part of our ecology, of our biodiversity, of creating havens for flora and fauna and wildlife and our otters, our bats, our bees, our bugs, and our mightiest battle in the present age to regain control of our climate. So there you have a rough summary of how the canals came to be and what this series is about. In the next episode, I'll be going back in time to explore some of the ancient legends around our waterways and how so many of them are named for the goddesses of a people who are said to have lived in Ireland long before the records began. Thank you so much for listening to this podcast, and you can hear more episodes from this series by searching Waterways Ireland on Spotify, Apple, Alexa, Google, or whichever platform you get your podcasts. You can find further information about the waterways on waterwaysireland.org. My sincere thanks to series producer Ali Bunbury and the team at 11 for 10 Productions. And you'll find my own historical archive of stories from the past, mostly Irish, via turtlebunbury.com.